John Clayton.
Powered through the Alaska Airlines Studios.
Streaming live at 710sports.com. On demand everywhere on the 710 Seattle Sports app. Now, John Clayton.
And joining us on the Venue Kings Hotline is Sean Salisbury. And so 3 weeks are in the book. And the one thing that I think that other than maybe the Rams and the Kansas City Chiefs, I don't think there's any great team in the league right now.
No, I would agree, John. And we've discussed many times about how sloppy football is early in the season. And the Rams are playing really good football, and there's some really good teams. But I would agree with you. I don't look at any team and say they're unbeatable, just like I don't look at a New England Patriots team that is struggling so mightily right now with, you know, getting some to be able to separate with the wide receivers for Brady, and they're hoping to get some help, obviously, with Edelman back and getting Gordon going. So I don't look at them also as saying a team that can't make it. But there are some really bad football teams, and I don't know if great describes any team. We've got some good ones, but not a great team that's dominant that we know that's going to be sitting there in February and that we pick right now.
How stunned are you about how bad the Houston Texans are right now?
Stunned. I don't know if I'm stunned. I expected it to be a little slow going, but it's awful right now, and there is no rhythm. They're a very undisciplined team. The play calling's been kind of up and down, not kind of a lot. Deshaun Watson's had his moments of greatness and then been sluggish at times. Defensively, Watt showed up, but Jadeveon Clowney and Whitney Mercilus have been non-existent. It's a bad watch, John, and it's the people here in Houston are awfully frustrated. But the thing is, it's not just that they're 0-3, it's how they're losing. You know, you jump off sides, illegal procedure 4 times in your own building. Inexcusable. So a lot of this is discipline that needs to be taken care of coaching-wise, but you can't just say it's Bill O'Brien's fault, because drop passes, Deshaun throwing it to other people in the end zone when you're going in to score, and then him making 5 straight plays that are good, and then them, you know, messing up on a special teams play, or, you know, not making a tackle in the open field or not getting Eli. So really, if Watson doesn't play great and Watt doesn't play with energy, this team can't win. And I'm stunned that they're playing this poorly. I'm not stunned that they're 0-3, but I'm stunned they're playing this poorly.
Yeah, it's just like there's so many things right now that just doesn't make sense. But let's make some sense with 4 downs.
All right, gentlemen, which rookie quarterback do you have more faith in after this third week of play?
Oh, that's a good question. I think all 4 are exactly where, John, we talked. And on my show, I had said that I thought by mid-October we could have 4 of them playing. And with the way we have it now, they're in the right place. I mean, maybe not team-wise because they're struggling, but they all are better than the guys that were in front of them. They just are. And the 4 guys are going to learn some lessons this year of greatness, and then they're going to learn some lessons of getting kicked in the teeth and struggling and realizing what it's like to be a rookie. But I guess, I mean, when you look at weapons, Rosen's got a couple of good weapons. They're just not a good football team. I like the Browns' weapons, I do, and Mayfield's playing with such swagger and confidence. And Buffalo's probably the team that's got the least amount of weapons for Josh Allen, but he played well last week. They're all going to have the up-and-down swing, John, but I think all 4 of them, by the end of this season, we're going to validate why they were picked in the first round. I would say Mayfield in that north, the way it is, it's up and down, and with some of the weapons they have, I think Baker Mayfield's got a good chance to have some great success and to be able to sustain it, at least in his rookie year. I like the fact that all 4 are starting. I want to get them experience so in year 2, the light switch goes on and they all see it different.
Yeah, I still think it's better to sit. I think we see the success that Patrick Mahomes has by sitting. I thought one of the most unfair things they did to Sam Darnold was play him 3 times in 11 days. I mean, and you can see, and again, I don't put this on Darnold whatsoever, but how can you come have a Monday night game, come back, have a Sunday game, and then have any kind of hope of going against a Greg Williams defense and try to pick up on it and with no practice? I mean, again, if you're a rookie, you need as much practice time to get things down. They did not do that. I still think Darnold is the best of the 4. Put Mayfield probably number 2. I'm just stunned that Josh Allen was able to do the limited things he was able to do against a Minnesota Viking defense that was considered to be one of the best in the league. And we'll see where it goes with Josh Rosen. It's an interesting class right now in the fact that they all are pretty well out there except for Lamar Jackson. But in the end, it's like I still think it's better served to let the quarterback sit at least in maybe half the season.
Yeah, and John, can I make a point real
Absolutely.
Quick
before
second down? I'm with you that Sam Darnold, I think he's going to be the best of all of them in the long run as well. But the reason why I don't subscribe to sit, I do if Brett Favre's there, if Joe Flacco's in front of Lamar, then all four of these guys are better than the guys that we're starting in front of them. So I think it's time, and it's a good lesson to learn as a young quarterback to get kicked in the teeth and be able to deal with adversity. It'll be an interesting saga as we go through the season.
Second down, guys. What's the difference between Patrick Mahomes and the rest of the quarterbacks around the league?
Well, I think Andy Reid may be as good a quarterback teacher early in guys' careers as anybody we have in the league. He's one of those guys. For some reason, he relates. And when you relate and you're a great teacher, anybody can coach that's in the NFL. Coaching X's and O's, they all know him. There's a difference between coaching and being able to teach. And Andy is a great teacher. Plus, it doesn't hurt. Patrick Mahomes has weapons, as many weapons as anybody in the league. And everybody talks about Mahomes' arm strength. We see that. But this guy's playing like a doctor right now, where he's surgically putting the ball where he wants to put it. It's fascinating to watch him play. So he's far ahead of the curve. But that goes back to John. They had a veteran Pro Bowler, Alex Smith, in front of him last year. And he obviously took that time to watch and learn how the pros are supposed to do it. Enormous talent. But he's also doing the footwork and the mechanics thing is as good as anybody right now. But the weapons help. Andy Reid's as good an early quarterback teacher, getting people going as we have in this league, John.
He really is, and I think that you can see. He's taken Nick Foles. He's taken Donovan McNabb. I mean, he's done so many good things with all the quarterbacks that have been around him. I mean, what he did with Alex Smith last year was sensational. But, boy, I tell you what, I mean, I see a little Brett Favre in I see combinations like Brett Favre and Michael Vick and all these things with Patrick Mahomes. He's special. 13 touchdown passes in 3 weeks. Incredible.
With Jimmy Garoppolo out, what's the next move for the 49ers?
I honestly have no idea. I don't know what they're going to do, and I don't think they do either. I don't know if somebody would be, there's somebody who said, man, maybe we should. I was reading it. Can you go trade for Teddy Bridgewater, get him out of New Orleans? I don't know. It's Kyle Shanahan's good with offense. But when you've invested, it's got to be such a downer for them when you've invested not only the money, but the time and Jimmy's growth and watching him and where they were going to go because their high hopes. John, I don't know. I mean, where do you go off the scrap heap? Do you go get Colin Kaepernick? I mean, he's familiar with with San Francisco. Obviously, it's a different system than he ran when he was there. Wants to play football again, I think. But remember, he opted out in San Francisco instead of staying in. So would he go back under a different regime, a new coach? And would they go get him? I mean, he's an enormous talent. He's been out of the league and hadn't started for a couple of years. So maybe that's the next option. But the San Francisco 49ers are in trouble because they needed the quarterback to get them through this.
No, they're going scrap heap. I mean, and you'll appreciate this because they brought in Tom Savage, T.Y. Yates. I mean,
right.
They're just kind of going with. And I think what it comes down to is that you realize maybe this isn't the year. And they've lost their starting running back. They paid $7.5 million to Jerick McKinnon. You know, he's out with an ACL. Garoppolo, I mean, they're going to go down and, get Beathard out there as the quarterback. I mean, it's a mess. I mean, it's like sometimes the brakes don't go for you, and sometimes it's not like they're conceding the season, but there's not much they can do. They're not bringing Kaepernick back because, remember, that was not a good parting of the ways between the two sides. So that's not going to happen. And so it's like scrap heap. It looks like going to be their answer.
Fourth down, gentlemen. The Arizona Cardinals announced yesterday that rookie Josh Rosen will get the start versus the Seahawks. Is he ready? And what's your prediction on how he will play versus Seahawks defense?
No, of course he's not ready. No rookie is, but it's good for him. Now he's very poised, and most people felt coming out that mechanically and just the way he went about his business, he was as sound as anybody pro-ready. But this team's not very good. The key is you better lean on a couple guys like Fitz and Johnson and get them the football. And if you're calling the plays for them, you can't hold it long because they'll make it miserable on you. You better establish some run and some play action. Of course, he's not ready, but he's going to have to get ready real fast. He's going to learn a valuable lesson about what it's like to play in the league. But he'll have some great. He'll have moments in this game where he should be where everybody say, "Yep, it was time." And then he's going to have moments where they say, ooh, boy, he's got a lot to learn. But he better be in that playbook all week, leaning on Sam Bradford and get himself ready. The key is for him not to try to do too much. And I never like a guy to play not to lose. I don't like guys that play not to lose. I like guys that play to win. I hope that Arizona's aggressive with him, John, he's just got to be smart and judicious with the football and play aggressive and be smart.
Yeah, what I look at when you think of most rookie quarterbacks, I mean, you know, there's exceptions. I mean, some guys can come in and be great. Most come in, and they're only going to score between 15 and 19 points a game. Simple as that. And so that's my expectation for Rosen. It may, you know, get, but then the question is going to be, is he going to have turnovers? Because usually you have turnovers when you have a young guy in there. That's just the nature of where it goes. So I think that it's going to be tough. But again, they really had no choice. Sam Bradford was so awful in his first three games. You know, they go to Rosen, hope that he can try to salvage something. It's going to be very difficult to do, but you know, this sets things up for the Seahawks to be 2-2. Again, I think Rosen was the most ready of the four quarterbacks that are out there to be able to go out and play, but he doesn't have much at wide receiver. Larry Fitzgerald's playing with a hamstring injury. Their running game has been non-existent, and their defense has been horrible. It's going to be a tough one, Sean.
Yeah, it sure is.
Okay, and of course, it's always great to catch up with you on the Venue Kings hotline with Four Downs. And hey, let's do it later in the week.
Can't wait, John. Thanks, buddy.
All right, Sean Salisbury joining us on the Venue Kings hotline. You can check out the show in the 710 Sports app. It's driven by your Puget Sound Acura dealer. Coming up next, we are going to get the grade book out. We're going to get the report card. It's the John Clayton Show, 710 ESPN Seattle.
You're listening to The Professor, John Clayton.
Live from the Alaska Airlines Studios.
Streaming through the 710 Sports app and on 710sports.com.
It's time for The Report Card with The Professor.
And, of course, we go to the report card every day. We grade the good, the bad, the ugly, the smart, the stupid, what people say, what people do, whether they're players, coaches, you name it. We try to get them and put out what they've done, even if there's a mascot that's done by the NHL that looks terrible. We'll give a grade to it. And so, Ashley Cox, what do we have?
All right, John, first up, we all know that it was the NBA media day yesterday. And over in Cleveland, Kevin Love walked into the Cavs locker room during media day and found his teammate Channing Frye in a new location. Let's take a listen.
Hey, it's Cavs media day. Hey, hey, Channing, whose locker did you take? Come on, man.
Some dude?
Wow.
Any idea whose locker he took?
LeBron.
Oh, sure did.
He took LeBron's locker?
Sure did.
Wow. Pretty bold. I mean, so, and I, you know, even though they're good friends and all that stuff, I guess, you know, you can probably say that that was permitted, but man, those are big lockers to fill in for when you take over for LeBron in Cleveland. So I'll give him a B-. Again, I don't know how good this team is going to be. I don't think it's going to be very good, you know, particularly. I mean, what is it like you lose about 18, 20 games when you take LeBron out of your lineup and all that stuff? And so they go from, what, a 48-win team probably to a 30-win team. That's not going to be good. But, hey, a bold move taking over LeBron's locker room. Now, does he get some of the benefits and some of the endorsements and stuff like that?
Probably that I'm not sure, but he looked real comfortable. I mean, he was sitting in a chair. It looked like he was eating some type of, like, Chipotle bowl. Mm-hmm. And he was just watching TV with his feet kicked up. I was like, he's just living the dream right now in LeBron's area, or former area, I should
say. Of course, I guess, I don't know if you want to call it a dream when there's like 38 games or 30 games that you might win. That's not necessarily going to be good.
No, but it was just media day, so he was just soaking it all in, getting ready for a season.
Well, it is good to have the NBA season in corner. Of course, as we'll start to find out here in the next couple of years, hockey season is starting a little bit earlier. They're already going into their preseason and all that and getting ready for the regular season. Kind of a good time right now, but the NBA is all ready to go.
Sure is. All right, next one, John, is coming out of Detroit. A 20-year-old food service worker at Comerica Park, which is where the Tigers play, has been charged after a video was posted on Instagram of this worker apparently spitting in a pizza that was supposed to be served to customers. And according to the local courts, the worker has been charged with a felony count of food law violations, and he could face up to 4 years in jail. What's your grade?
With a spitting move, I'd say probably we have to give it a B, because, I mean, we have to give him an F.
Without oh, for question. Sure.
No, no doubt, because it's stupid and it's rude and all that stuff.
That's just gross.
Mm-hmm. But fortunately, I mean, they were able to catch it. That's, I think, the great part about that, to be able to find a way to be able to find that to happen. And so that's where I give a good grade, because, I mean, can you imagine? But why would you do something like that?
Also, it wasn't even like security camera footage. It was on social media. So somebody he worked with took the video and posted it on Instagram, and that's where they found it.
Well, I think we have to give the person who apparently does not like this worker, the coworker, we have to give him or her an A for being able to do that and then just to post it and all that stuff. But then the bad part is if you're going to be the person now facing could be 4 years in jail, what might that person do to the person who turned him in?
Right? It's a little crazy.
And yeah, it really is.
There's a lot of moving parts in that story, even though it's quite small. But I guess I feel good
about it. As much as I love pizza, is that I will not have too many pieces of pizza in an arena. Because, again, it's like my big thing is that, you know, I eat it and it goes right to my stomach and kind of expands my stomach and all that stuff. So it's like it's just like extra weight for me with pizza, as much as I love pizza.
Same. It's a lot of gluten in just one slice. It's amazing. All right, John, are you familiar with BYU's mascot, Cosmo the Cougar?
I am not.
Okay, so last year Cosmo had a killer dance move during a halftime show at one of the football games, and it went absolutely viral. Like, saw it everywhere. He did it with their dancer cheer team. This past Saturday, Cosmo was also part of a cheer routine that involved a trampoline and doing some flips. But while in the air, Cosmo kind of lost his head, and that video also went viral. So what's your grade on Cosmo the Cougar?
Probably doing too much. I mean, now, did he get hurt? I mean, is he injured, or is there something going wrong with him? Because, again, he's got a big game coming up against UW this weekend.
So the Cougar itself was totally fine. It was just midair. He literally lost his head.
He lost his head?
Literally in the air, lost his head.
Well, let's give that a C-.
Okay.
I mean, you have to have secure things. But again, if you're trying to do too much and you get caught, then that's on him. That's on the Cougar. So it's like, that's not good. So you got to watch what you're doing without any question. So I think that we'll have to give that one a C- because, you know, if you're doing too much, you're not doing what the code word would be for the mascots. Don't let your head, don't let it go to your head. I guess is the best way to phrase it.
That's a good way to call it. All right, last one here, John. Hannah Storm and Andrea Kramer will be the first female duo to call an NFL game, and they will be on Amazon Prime for the Thursday night coverage.
Yeah, I like it. I mean, because what I like about it is they're friends. I've worked with them both. And just that opportunity and a rare opportunity like that, my guess is that Hannah will probably be doing the play-by-play. Andrea will be doing the color and analysis, which I think she'll be very good at. And I like it. And again, I've always respected Hannah for, you know, having worked with her and done so many sports centers with her. Andrea, I missed when she left ESPN, but we've stayed in contact and have remained good friends and all that stuff. So I'm just happy. I think it's a historic moment. I think it's very good. It's interesting that Amazon was able to do that and, you know, put them in Prime. So I like it a lot. What do you think?
I think it's fantastic. Also, the first female duo to call an NFL game. Let's go, ladies.
Mm-hmm.
Just paving the way. I'm really excited. I'm a big Hannah Storm fan. She's fantastic. So I actually might just get Amazon Prime or borrow somebody's account or watch it. Actually, I should watch the game with them. Mm-hmm. That's even better.
Yeah, Jeff Bezos would appreciate that
if
you do that.
Yes, mm-hmm. I'll just watch the game with them. It'll be great.
Yeah. I mean, why don't you call Jeff and see if he's in town on Thursday and then go over and watch.
Perfect.
I mean, unless you're house sitting.
I am house sitting, but
then you can't go.
I know, but I can next week after I'm done house sitting.
Yeah, okay. But again, it's like, so they'll have other games, which is good. But they're doing this one on Thursday, which I think is going to be great. So congratulations to them, and good for Amazon for being able to do that. And of course, that's good for getting the grade book out on the report card. Coming up next, we are taking your text questions. Text us at 710-710, and you can check out the show in the 710 Sports app. It's driven by your Puget Sound Acura dealer. Text questions next. It's the John Clayton Show, 710 ESPN Seattle.
John Clayton.
Powered through the Alaska Airlines Studios.
On demand with the 710 Seattle Sports app.
And, of course, now time to take your text questions. And what you do is you text your questions in to 710-710. And, of course, Ashley reads them and I answer them. So what do we have for text questions?
All right, John, 253 is wanting to know, assuming that CJ Procise is healthy, could the Seahawks use him at a wide receiver position?
I doubt it. I mean, first off, he has to stay healthy. And, of course, here it comes down. We find out the reason he was inactive. He had a groin injury in the pregame. And so another injury. I guess they can, but I don't think they will. And, you know, that trust factor starting to wane again. I think you could even see it in the game against Chicago. Because as the game was going on Monday night a couple weeks ago, what they did is that you saw Mike Davis as the third, as the passing catching guy. They kept Rashad Penny in there. So I don't know. It's like just when you thought that things were getting back and being right for CJ Procise, they start to slip again. And, you know, he's talented. You know how talented he is, but he's not healthy, and now he's got a groin injury. We'll see how bad that is. But I'd say right now they would not make him a wide receiver unless it's a total, total emergency.
The 360 says, hey, Professor, love the show. Listen daily. Who besides Earl Thomas could be potentially traded from the Hawks this season?
I don't think anybody. I mean, they're not deep enough to give up talent. I think that, you know, Thomas, obviously, because of the situation he's in, has to be under consideration. But, I mean, when you think about it, it's like, okay, you've got all these new starters. I mean, what, it's been as many as 8 new starters on defense. And you can't give up. I mean, again, this team is not trying to, you know, break it down and build it back up. I mean, you know, it looked like that a little bit in the first 2 games, but I think they're trying to bring this together. So there's no trade I can even conceive of. Again, well, maybe one. I mean, maybe if they feel that, because I can't see them giving up. Let's say J.D. McKissick, they can get him back, you know, by midseason, right before the trade deadline. Maybe they would trade C.J. Procise, but other than that, there's no, I don't see any trade, whatever.
From the 509, good morning, John. If any more quarterbacks go down, do you think Robert Griffin could be traded for a starting option?
I mean, for cheap, yeah. I mean, because right now he's a third in Baltimore, and so, I mean, you can probably get him for a 7th rounder in 2020. So, yeah, I guess that could be one because, again, he's got starting experience. He's mobile. I mean, you got to be desperate to try to do it. But, yeah, I could see that being an option. Maybe it's not a great option, but, you know, he's expendable right now in Baltimore.
530 is asking, if Fetty looked pretty awesome on Sunday, was this a big game step forward? Was this game a big step forward for him?
It was a step forward. I don't know if it's a big step forward, but any kind of a step forward is big for him because, I mean, he's scrutinized probably more than any other Seahawk other than Russell Wilson. And, you know, I think there's not a lot of confidence they have in Jermaine Ifedi, but I thought he played well. When you think about this, I mean, he had his third consecutive game against a Pro Bowl caliber defensive lineman or pass rusher, and DeMarcus Lawrence is real good. He had 14.5 sacks last year. He's making $17.1 million a year on a 1-year contract. So, no, I thought that he held up pretty well. That's a good step forward. A great one. We'll see.
509 is asking if Nick Foles could be an option for the 49ers.
No, because they will not trade him. They know the value of what he has, and remember, they've got a quarterback that's just getting back from a ACL injury. That is not going to be an option. I mean, I think what, I mean, and you can see what they're doing right now. I mean, the fact they're bringing in the T.Y. Yates's and Tom Savage, I mean, it's like they're kind of conceding that there's not much they can do at the quarterback position, and there's not much they can do. I mean, their hopes of being a 7-9 win team, I think, you know, broke up when they lost Jerick McKinnon and they lost Jimmy Garoppolo.
206 is asking, what position should the Seahawks focus on upgrading most in the 2019 NFL draft?
I'd say pass rushing defensive ends. I think defensive end is one that they can really look at more than anything else. You know, they can possibly look at the receiver position, but they don't necessarily have, because again, what you know, Jerron Brown's on a 1-year contract, Brandon Marshall's on a 1-year contract. You know, you still have Doug Baldwin and you still have Tyler Lockett. I think, you know, you start defensive end because, again, you want those pass rushers. And so that would be number one. I mean, I think that, you know, then I think you probably, I don't know if you want a linebacker. I mean, because, again, it depends on what you're doing with K.J. Wright, but I think they're okay at linebacker right now, particularly if they're able to get anything out of Michael Kendricks. Now, again, they don't know if the suspension's coming down this week or not. You know, it's because I know Pete yesterday wasn't sure whether he's going to go. But I'd say pass rushing defensive end.
206 says, hi, John. Do the Seahawks have anything to worry about when facing the Cardinals this weekend?
Yeah. I mean, you can't take any team for granted in the National Football League. Just go back to this past week. I mean, did Minnesota take Buffalo for granted? Probably. They lost 27-6. How about, you know, Washington beating Green Bay? Did you expect that? I mean, if you can play down to an opponent, I know Pittsburgh does that often. I mean, sometimes they take opponents for granted and end up losing to those opponents that aren't that good. And so, no, they can't take Arizona for granted. It's still a division game. You know, there's a little bit of a rivalry there. They can't take it for granted.
206 wants to know, who's one of the most underrated NFL players of all time, according to you?
One of the most underrated of all time? Maybe Sam Mills when he was a linebacker. I thought he was, he got his recognition, but I thought he was so good even though he wasn't the biggest guy in the world. I think maybe Everson Walls, because remember, he was an undrafted guy. I mean, I know we were able to have the fortune in his last year in the, up for the Hall of Fame. You know, he had to wait 25 years. Now he's now a senior member, but he hasn't made it yet. Everson Walls, I thought, was one of the great. I mean, when you start to talk about, you take the undrafted guys, the guys that, haven't been drafted and now all of a sudden have great careers. So those are just a couple that I can think of right off the top of my head.
253 is asking, do you have a favorite movie that's a guilty pleasure for you?
Moneyball, I like a lot. Let's see. That's one that I always, if I see that one, I always try to go for it. Certainly, because again, there's not a lot. Sports movies are pretty good. I'd go probably with that. Moneyball. It's one of the pleasures.
It's a good one. It's a little slow, but it's really good.
Yeah, it is.
Really good. 206 says, hi, John. What's going on with Ed Dixon? Any updates?
No update. I mean, I would imagine that this long, 6 weeks into it, and I know he was upset that they put him on the NFI list for 6 weeks. So I would imagine by week 7 or 8, he should start to surface and then have to start making a decision. Where are they with Will Disley? Where are they with Nick Bennett? Bennett had a pretty good game the other day. You know, Disley's been off to a phenomenal start. And so, Dixon, at least they know he's good for blocking. And I know when needed, he's good for pass catching, but at the moment, he still has 3 more games to serve.
206 wants to know, Professor, what's your favorite city to visit while you're working?
Well, because, I mean, again, it's funny because, again, all I pretty much do is I usually stay toward the airport, and I don't get a chance to really get into the city too much. Certainly love going to Chicago. That's a great place to go. Pittsburgh, because I'm from Pittsburgh, so that may not go in. Denver's a great place to go into, and, of course, I'll be there on Monday, so that's always a good one. Certainly, anytime you get down to San Francisco, down to I miss San Diego a lot. San Diego is definitely one of my favorites, and that's why I hated it when they moved up north to L.A. So that was hurtful. So those are some of my favorites.
360 says, John, who's the most famous person you've ever interviewed?
I mean, I've obviously interviewed just most every star in the NFL. I remember interviewing Jonathan Winters once. That was kind of fun because he was in a funny movie, The Fish That Saved Pittsburgh. So I had a chance to interview him. And one of the great parts of that interview is that he says, yeah, that's one of the great parts of being, doing what he does as a comedian and all that. And usually what happens is he'll sit around and, talk about all the strange facilities, the mental facilities he's been with, with other different actors and actresses and comedians and stuff like that. It was a very strange interview.
That's pretty good. The 530 says, which Mariners player do you think would be the best football player?
Let's see. Trying to get the body type. I mean, Cameron Maybin has that kind of base, I mean, that football type of body. I mean, because you look at a lot of the center fielders and, they can maybe make that translation over into football. You like somebody with speed. I mean, D. Gordon, I think, would just be too small. That one would not fit. You'd have to think Mike Zunino would have a chance to be a linebacker, maybe. I mean, I think that, athletically, it's a first-round pick. Maybe he can do it. So those are three that come to mind.
There we go. I even think of Nelson Cruz right off the bat.
Yeah, but I think he's going to be too slow.
Yeah, but that's a big dude. That's a real big dude.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
Walking by him, I feel like a little shrimp. Okay. All right, John, the 253 wants to know, what's on the menu for lunch today?
Usually I never eat lunch, so it's an empty menu. I usually have to wait till dinner to be able to get anything. And so, and today I got a whole bunch of things going on, so that's going to be pretty much out of the mix, unfortunately. No lunch.
No lunch. That's okay. We're going to stick with food from the 206. John, what's your favorite airport food?
I think if you can, depending on some of the places, I mean, if you can get some chowder. Oh, now, you're talking airport or airplane? Probably if you're talking airport, I think.
Probably airport.
Yeah. I mean, I think you can get some good chowder. Then maybe find a good sandwich place. I mean, you can get a good sandwich. I mean, you can kind of pick and choose over at SeaTac and see what you want. I mean, you might take a pop over to Anthony's and all that and at the airport. I mean, that could be one. And so there's a lot of pretty good places. But normally, I'm just waiting for the plane. So,
man, now I'm hungry. All this talk about food. Thanks, texters.
There you go.
That's it for Tech Today,
John.
All right,
you can check out the show in the 710 Sports app. It's driven by your Puget Sound Acura dealer. Coming up next, it's Dave Crosby.
You're listening to The Professor, John Clayton.
Live from the Alaska Airlines Studios.
Streaming through the 710 Sports app and on 710sports.com.
And joining us right now is Dave Crosby. And so, Dave, before we get into talking about the Seahawks, wanted to get your reaction to the vote by the city council. I know it may not have been a surprise, but sometimes with the city council, everything is a surprise. But a unanimous vote to go ahead with the reconstruction of the Key.
Oh, I agree with you, John. I mean, based on history, you take nothing for granted, even though it looked really good all the way through. And I do believe that that's the last hurdle as far as I'm concerned, that we will have hockey here probably in 2020, depending on how construction goes, and basketball probably within 10 years.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I think that's probably the right timetable because, I mean, you have to get through this current NBA TV contract before anybody would consider doing expansion or anything like that. It's just too much money and too much profit. So you can see that that's not going to give any opportunities to get an NBA team. But, you know, if there is the next NBA team, it probably would go to Seattle.
Oh, I think if Seattle's got an arena ready, it would definitely go to Seattle. I don't think there's any issue with that whatsoever. So it'll cost a lot, and we'll see who the owners will be. Maybe the current group has some interest in it. We'll see. But the table will be set, and regardless of basketball, hockey will be here. And I'm very curious to see the impact that it has.
Mm-hmm. No,
because,
I think...
you know, the Sounders were an unbelievable startup. Las Vegas had a great run because they kept the expansion rules in such a way that if you did it smartly, you could be competitive, obviously, right away. Now, I wouldn't think that, you know, you can expect to be a team playing for the Stanley Cup in your first year, but you can be good in your first year. And I think that would help. I think Seattle also has got a huge grassroots group of hockey fans, like they had a huge grassroots group of soccer fans that have been supporting the Thunderbirds and Everett's team here for years, the Thunderbirds for as long as I've been here. So I don't think there'll be any question about the game selling out. We kind of had that question answered when they put the tickets up for sale. So I think it'll be an unqualified success, and the NBA will be champing at the bit, as they say, John, to get a part of it.
Okay, so now it's Tuesday, and Earl Thomas is still a Seahawk. We don't know if we can continue that thought for how long because, I mean, it's such a turbulent situation, but it's one where no Dallas trade, they're not doing anything, no Atlanta trade. I still don't see the Kansas City Chiefs doing anything. But how do you look at the whole situation with a player who is, you know, so mad about his contract situation that he'll withhold his services in practice but not in a game?
Well, he says he'll withhold his services in practice if he's got a headache. So you hope he doesn't have any headaches.
Mm-hmm.
You're fine with him in a game. This is going to be a much bigger, as this goes on, if it goes on and they don't make the trade, which, as you're indicating, it seems less and less likely as time goes on. I don't think it'll be a big deal for Pete Carroll and those guys. They'll find a way to plow through it. I mean, they've done this before. There are different reasons, obviously, with Marshawn Lynch. It was physical, but Marshawn Lynch had a different practice schedule than everyone else. I think that they can do the same thing with Earl Thomas, and it be a big distraction on the outside, but on the inside, they're pretty good at dealing with distractions on that organization. So I think it can go on, and I think once the trade deadline passes, the story will die down.
Mm-hmm. I mean, what if you were Pete or you were John Snyder, how would you handle the situation?
Well, I mean, I would have probably signed Earl Thomas to a short extension, and I would have done it in the summer based on what he's done, even though I understand that hasn't been a successful move for him in the past. That having been said, I would do exactly what they're doing right now then if he's not gonna sign the extension. He's playing all out. Pro Football Focus has rated him as number one safety playing football right now, which we kind of already knew already. You're not worried about his performance on the field, and ultimately, at the end of the day, that's all that matters. If he's giving you the performance on the field, then you're set. If he misses practice with unexcused absences, you can fine him. As long as he delivers on Sunday, let's face it, the NFL's a bottom-line league. That's all anyone cares about anyway, is the bottom line. Now, I don't have any hostility towards Earl Thomas for his claims that he's going to take care of his body because they haven't invested in him. I know he's making $8.5 million this year, and that can, you know, I mean, the NFL contracts are barely worth the paper they're written on for the most part. Except for the guaranteed money, I can see a guy asking for the guaranteed money and being very, very inflexible about the whole thing.
Mm-hmm.
But that having been said, other organizations, this would be a bigger problem than it is here, in my opinion. And look, you saw the Steelers, who are going through an even worse circumstance, but have been going through it for years with Le'Veon Bell. How'd they look last night?
Not too bad.
With their backs against the wall on the road, they got it done. So there are certain organizations that are better suited to handle this than others, and this is one that it strikes me as being very well suited to handle this sort of distraction, even though it'll be loud in the media. When's the trade deadline, John?
About in week 8.
Okay,
Tuesday of week eight.
So we got 5 more weeks of it.
Mm-hmm. In five more weeks, and of course, you know, he's still going to be pushing that envelope to either get something going his way.
But if they're
going to
make a trade, it would be at the deadline, I would think.
Probably.
They kind of know where they're at that point and, you know, get something rather than nothing.
Mm-hmm. Of course, I mean, right now, I mean, everybody in Dallas is not thinking Earl Thomas. They're thinking they want Scott Linehan no longer to be the offensive play caller. They want Jason Garrett out of there. They're not too happy with Dak Prescott. It's not a happy situation with the Cowboys.
No, they look terrible. I mean, they just look terrible in that game. And I don't see how Earl Thomas would make one lick of a difference for what ails that crew. Now, look, it's the NFL and things can change. But, you know, their offense looks terrible. I don't blame guys for wanting Linehan out. And even when I was a Cowboy fan back a couple of years ago, I wanted Jason Garrett out. I've never understood why they've held on to him for so long. I mean, the Cowboys are blowing the window. They've got a tremendous rookie running back, or not a rookie running back, a running back on his rookie contract. They got a tremendous good quarterback on his rookie contract. They could have loaded up on the outside like the Rams did, like the Seahawks did when they had that circumstance and really make a serious run at it. Instead, they have not, which speaks to their terrible general manager, Jerry Jones, who's the one who really should go. Of course, he's not going anywhere because he owns the team. But he's the worst of them all in terms of talent evaluation, just abysmal. And they're blowing one of those, the classic window in the NFL, which is when you've got your absolute key players on rookie contracts, that's when you got a chance to really compete.
Mm-hmm.
And instead, they're looking square down the barrels of a losing season, in my opinion.
Well, and see, my big criticism of what Jerry has done is it goes even more than that, because he's shed salary as opposed to added salary. And because, again, when you have a quarterback in his rookie contract, particularly one that's the lowest paid quarterback in the league, at what, 4 years at $690,000 a year, I mean, you have the opportunity to load up. But he's done such a poor job with cap management. I mean, he has like about $27 million a year tied up in proration from all the crazy deals that he did to just free up some cap room. So that's held him back. He's wiped out the entire secondary core, you know, Morris Claiborne and Orlando Scandrick. And, you know, he cut his $3.4 million kicker in Dan Bailey. It's like it's just spread all over the place. And so you look and you see nothing but young players, and that's nice. But then, you know, are they going to be able to re-sign him once, you know, you start to have to pay Ezekiel Elliott and Dak Prescott? Probably not.
Right, and in the meantime, you're not going to win any games.
Mm-hmm.
It's abysmal.
He's a terrible
general manager, just one of the worst I've ever seen.
Although Jerry did come out today and been an interesting point, because you know, he looked back at that Tyrone Crawford quarterback hit on Russell Wilson in the penalty, and now he's not happy with the league and the competition committee because he, like Clay Matthews and others, think that they're totally screwing up this roughing the quarterback rule.
Well, they are, and I saw a story where they're talking about it. They're having a confab about it. John, I got a question for you.
Yeah.
Where's your buddy Roger Goodell?
I'm sure he's sitting in Park Avenue. And you
know, why has he had nothing to say about anything for, like, it feels like a month?
Well, that's usually him. I mean, he's going to stay quiet during the course of the regular season. I mean, the only time you're going to see him surface is going to be the owners' meeting in New York. Is in New York this year, and so he's usually pretty quiet in times like this. I mean, you know, you don't see him go to too many games. He may go to a game or two early, then he might have a press conference somewhere else. But you know, I think that, you know, he takes his time, and then of course, you know, he'll go over to London for some of the games there. And so this is usually his quiet time.
Well, he needs to say something about the state of his league. I mean, the criticism is from every one of their broadcast partners. Everyone is criticizing this new referee rule,
mm-hmm.
and the head of the league is saying nothing about it.
Well, and I mean, to me, it's just they've, because I know talking to Mike Pereira and guys like that, it's like who have been in that position, it's like it's just unprecedented what they're doing. It's like they're creating things as they're going along, and that's something they're never supposed to do. I mean, this roughing the quarterback, which is, you know, the burping of the quarterback, is an addition during the season that wasn't even there before. And then one of the problems that they have is that they'll have lawyers kind of write up on the words in the new rule changes that confuse more than settle things.
It's a disaster, John.
It's not good. I agree. I think, and again, it's taking away the quality of the game. Say what you're right about Jerry and what he's not done with his team, but he made one of the best comments of the team. He says, "What I worry about is that you're now taking a new generation of players and then taking them and getting it down to the high school kids and saying we're not going to be physical anymore, and it's a physical game."
That's true. Agreed.
So what's on Bob Graz and Tom today?
Our old pal El Hombre, Michael Bradley, will join us at 1 o'clock.
Okay, that sounds good. And, of course, he'll be talking about, I'm sure, the little bit of the Eagle game where they weren't great, but at least they did some good things. They
got Carson Wentz came back.
Carson Wentz came back. They still don't have much. They don't have much at running back and wide receiver, but, hey, they're better than New England. Hey, Dave, thank you. We'll talk to you tomorrow. And, of course, Ashley Cox, thanks for filling in for Maura Dooley the last couple of days. Maura is going to be back tomorrow. We will be back tomorrow at 10. It's the John Clayton Show, 710 ESPN Seattle.